Today we want to look at three questions. Number one, are we doing what they were doing in the book of Acts? Number two, are we seeing what they were seeing? And number three, is it worth it? For one, where did they meet? Where did they meet? Well, we got tons of literature on this in the book of Acts. 46th verse of the second chapter, in the temple and from house to house. Chapter 5, in the temple and from house to house. I taught you publicly and from house to house. It's almost like they had these weird things called house churches. So they would gather in people's homes. And then they had more of like an organized, bigger, public, what's the word? Like a centralized, central teaching. So it'd be like in the temple or Acts chapter 19, the schoolhouse of Tyrannus. They preferred homes. They liked homes. Where did they meet? What did they do in these meetings, in these houses? Again, this is very clear. Acts 2:42. They were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teachings and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. The apostles' teaching was the verbal word. This was later codified and canonized in the New Testament canon. So how nice would it be if you could be there right in front of the apostle Peter as he's teaching? Wow, like what if Peter was teaching tonight down at First Church of whatever, down the street, and, you know, how many of us would be here? I know I wouldn't. I'd be down there listening to Peter teach. So they were focused on the word. They were focused on fellowship. What this means is koinonia. Koine means common, to share in common. We know this. The breaking of bread, which is sharing their meals, and to prayer. That's us. That's our small groups getting together. I know when you have the snack list and you're on snacks for that week, it doesn't feel very spiritual. It's spiritual. The breaking of bread, sharing, having people clustered around those veggies and ranch dip. That's good. And then the conversation, the time of prayer, the teaching of the word. The apostles, they said, you know, we can't get sidetracked. We have to devote ourselves to what? Prayer and the word. Paul, chapter 20, verse 27. I didn't shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose of God by good Bible teaching. Boy, if there's one thing we know how to do here, Bible teaching, the level of equipping, teaching from lay members, volunteer members is unbelievable here. How frequently did they meet? Day by day, or NIV, daily, every day. Chapter 5, verse 42, every single day. Acts chapter 20, verse 7, Ephesus. Paul was preaching, dialegomai, dia meaning between, like a dialogue, legomai meaning to speak. So preaching, Paul was leading discussion, having a back and forth between the people in the upper room. And he was leading a discussion, and since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. I guess if you have the Apostle Paul in town for one night, you stay up until midnight. In fact, he continued talking until dawn. He talked all night until the sun was coming up, so long that a kid was bored to death, literally. 10-year-old kid, Eutychus. Upper room, three stories, lamps, body heat, mouth breathers, falls out of the window, just dies. Paul raises him from the dead, brings him back up, keeps talking. Where'd I leave off? Isaiah 42. Okay. So I guess if there's a resurrection and if Paul's speaking, you stay up until midnight. Okay. Here's what interests me. This was discussion. And they just really loved meeting. They did it every day. They enjoyed each other. I read Jeith Fernando's excellent commentary in the book of Acts. This stuck out to me here. See, he was perfect to write a book, commentary in the book of Acts, because he's a practitioner. He's also a scholar. He said, Paul chatted through the night with the people. This is something that friends do. Have you had this? Of course you have. Staying up late. You know, sometimes your roommate falls asleep on you, you know. By you're just, you know, talk, you know, giggling, laughing, sharing, confessing sin, you know, opening up. And this is stuff that you do. You take that road trip to a pancake house in Cincinnati at 2 in the morning. Why do you do that? You just love each other. That's why. You love it. How frequently? Pretty frequently. Pretty freaking frequently. Yeah. Was this like a social club where it was just like anything goes in this group? Or was this a missional group? A group that was on mission. Like, were they concerned with, church growth? Like numbers? Oh, no. That's so carnal. You know, I have somebody counting, you know, how many people were at a meeting. Oh, that's just, that just gives me the creeps to be, thinking about numbers and, growth and numbers and growth and, how many people were, how many people were there? Yeah, it's just so unspiritual. Oh, man. Lots on numbers. Acts 1:15, there were 120 people in that upper room before Pentecost. How'd they know that? Somebody counted. That's how they knew. You don't just know. That doesn't just strike you. 120. It's 120 people here. Acts 2:41, there were 3,000 souls saved that day. Acts 2:47, the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. Acts 4, many believed. The number came to be 5,000. They increased it from 3,000 to 5. Acts 5:14, multitudes were constantly added to their number. Acts 6 verse 1, the disciples were increasing in number. Acts 6, the number of the disciples continued to increase greatly. Acts 9, the church continued to increase in number. Acts 9:42, many believed in the Lord. In Antioch, a large number believed. Considerable numbers were brought to the Lord. They taught considerable numbers. The churches were increasing in number daily. Many of the Corinthians, when they heard they were believing, a large number of people believed. They made many disciples, a large number of the God-fearing Greeks. All who lived in Asia heard the word of the Lord. Paul was persuaded and turned away a number, considerable number of people. You see, Paul, in Jerusalem, how many thousands there are who have believed. Finally, at the book of Acts, from the beginning, chapter 1, to the very end, many non-believing Jews came to Paul at his lodging in large numbers. I'm leaving out references. I couldn't fit them all on the slides. Numbers. Growth. They cared about this. You know why? You know why? Numbers of people. If we aren't focused on this, on what are we going to be focused? Paul and Barnabas, they went after their first missionary tour. They went down and they reported what happened. You know, even Luke will mention people by name. I don't know, man, having a prayer list and, you know, we're actually writing people's names and like, you know, how they came to faith in Christ, doing, what's that work? Fernando calls it follow through work. We call it follow up. Same thing. Lydia, the Philippian jailer. Sosthenes, you know, we find that out in 1 Corinthians, but you get the point. I mean, no, names of people by name who came to Christ, where, when, how. Paul reported this. Luke records it. We're not saying that we want to be overly focused on numbers, but we want to pray to God we can get this church growing again. He's done it before. He can do it again. This is his will for the church. You think about the early church. They grew from 500 people in AD 33, and roughly 70 years later, according to David Barrett, in the Yale historian Kenneth Lauderette, they grew to roughly 1 million people by the close of the first century. What this means is they saw 2,000-fold growth in 70 years. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Ephesus, it says that they reached all the province of Asia, Corinth, Athens, Rome. I mean, the big cities. Heard the gospel and more. Paul would stay there for a year and a half, 2 years. You know, I don't know. Are we doing what they're doing? We aren't seeing any kind of growth like this. Why aren't we seeing this? Could be because the Lord has taken his lampstand away from this church. That could be it. You know what we should do? We should break up into groups tonight and we should try and figure out all the things wrong with this church as to why the Lord would want to remove his power. And that's why we aren't growing. That's what we, you know, what we should do actually. We shouldn't leave it just for tonight. A good practice would be to sit there and point out all the flaws and all of the speculations as to what's wrong with this church as to why we aren't seeing that kind of growth. That's a recipe for death. You might as well just sit there and pick out all the flaws in your spouse. That'd be a great idea. Why aren't we seeing growth like this? we have. Did you know? Compounded growth. To go from 500 people to a million. You know how much that is per year? 11.5%. We've seen growth like that in this church. We've seen it in this sphere. First 5 years of this sphere, over double-digit growth every single year. People coming to Christ. I mean, we couldn't keep up with the growth. I think the Lord has turned the faucet off and said, chill out for a little bit. I'm talking to pastors over the city. Some of them have lost half of their church with all the political, pandemic, masks or no masks, vaccine or no vaccine, Biden, Trump, all the other crap that we're dealing with. They're gone. These people are gone. We're down. That's for sure. We're down. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. And we've seen growth like this, and our church supports missions across the globe that we're seeing way more than 11.5%. We are seeing this and more of what the early church was going through. So maybe you're in the first century and you're in the church of Philippi and you're going, oh man, the persecution, it's so bad in Philippi, you know, the polytarch, and this is really terrible. Oh, it's so awful. You know, our church isn't growing. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if you knew that all the money you were giving to Paul in those gifts, you know, Paul says, and I'm not supposed to use the epistles, but I guess I will. Philippians 4, he says, you gave a gift more than once. Their giving to Paul led to the gospel being preached all throughout Corinth, Greece, one of the central cities of the ancient world. Thousands were coming to Christ, not because of the Philippians, but because of their giving, because of your giving. Tens of thousands of people are coming to faith in Christ across the world. We are seeing this growth and more. Yes, we are. What do we never see in the early church? Like, what is it that we never see them doing? That's a key thing with discernment. Not just what you're seeing, but what you never see. Not just what you hear, but what you never hear. We never see a meeting in church buildings. Nothing holy, nothing ornate. They used the temple because they were Jews, right? So they had a free pass. Like, we're Jews, and we're talking about Yeshua, Mashiach, Jesus, Messiah. And until they got kicked out of there, and then they had to get their own place. But schoolhouse of Tyrannus, public set, open-air preaching in this area of the world. No church buildings. You know when the earliest church building is that we find archaeologically? It doesn't come to the 3rd century. That's the earliest church building we have. And incidentally, that building, there's a wall that was bombed out in the middle of it to make it home church capable. 3rd century. No church buildings. We got buildings, but I mean, they look like this. If somebody took a picture of this, you'd be like, what is that? A movie theater? I don't know. Like a bad movie theater? I don't even know what that is. No worship services. Not a single example of a worship service in the book of Acts. Contra every commentator you read. Oh man, they try and squeeze it in there. Well, they were praying to the Lord, so there must have been worship there. It doesn't say worship. It says prayer. Well, they're reading the Bible, so there's probably worship. It says studying the Bible. Not, there's no worship. No worship services. Debating politics. Nowhere in the book of Acts. Even when Paul is before Festus, Agrippa, Nero. I mean, he had an audience with these guys. It'd be like talking with the mayor, the governor, the president. Never brings it up. What's he bring up? The gospel. Over and over and over. They don't debate it. Emphasizing people's biological age. Here's one of the things that is a difficulty for our church. We have a pragmatic argument. You know what that means? That this is useful pragmatism. It's not that it's necessarily true. It's just that it works. We have a pragmatic argument that it's better to have, you know, kids in their own meeting, and then, you know, junior high in their own meeting, and then high school in their own meeting, and then college with college people, and young adults with young adults, and then, you know, elderly people with elderly people, and probably middle age in between, right? In the book of Acts, they didn't do that. They just piled them all in together. So you would have a baby crying right there, you know, aunt, uncle, a goat, you know? Probably, you know what I mean? Interruptions, your family, they're all just packed in there together, and that was the way that they did it. Here's the thing, is in our church right now, I don't know if you realize this, but across our church, in the college ministry, we're getting older. I don't know if you've noticed. Well, we're always getting older, but as a demographic, we're getting older. And because we're so stratified as, you know, high school, college, adult, everyone feels like, oh my God, we're in the young adult group. Everyone here is so old. And, you know, oh, this is just so old. Oh my God, I turned 24 the other day. You know, I might as well retire and stuff. And, if you told that to somebody in the early church, they would be like, what on earth? What? You might as well be speaking Latin. You know, what are you talking about? So what? You can't do the Great Commission with people in your church? Oh, I don't know, man. It'd just be so hard to bring my 27-year-old friend around my 25-year-old friends in my group. Come on. Let's get with it here. These are excuses. Okay, I got a question. Have you tried? Have you tried? No, I would never want to bring out my 30-year-old friend around this group because everyone's so old. Or, oh, wait a minute. Well, yeah, we're getting so old, and so I can't bring my old friends here. See how this doesn't work? It's a contradictory claim. It's we're so old, so I can't bring my old friends here. No, I mean, we're so young that I can't bring my old friends here. But if you're young, then you're a college group and there's no problem. So, my emphasis here would be follow the early church and stop making this a big issue. Yeah, we're going to have to change up wineskins. Sure. We're going to have to innovate. Yes. But mostly we need to get away from the unbelief that my friend wouldn't want to be a part of this group because of the age difference. Nobody here is 13, okay? They're going to be fine. They're going to like it. They're going to enjoy it. I'm old. I enjoy it. I enjoy hanging out. I got breakfast the other day with a 19-year-old. Had a blast. It was great. And so, yeah, it's very good, very uplifting. People really like it. The people that think that they wouldn't like it is you, not them, okay? All right, sermonette finished. Discovering that certain people are too far from God. No such thing in the book of Acts. Corinth, Greece, Athens, anywhere. Anywhere they go, people come to Christ. Number two, are we seeing what they were seeing? Did they have a perfect church? Perfect church. That's an oxymoron. You know what that is? Like, she's pretty ugly. Or jumbo shrimp. Or, country music. You know what I mean? Like, two things that don't go together. Perfect church. No such thing as a perfect church. They had rank hypocrisy. They had racism, widows being overlooked, the Hellenistic Jews and the Hebraic Jews. Simon the magician. There's a guy's magician. Not the cute kind, you know what I mean? like the clown, like a real occult worshiping. And he's just like, how much do I have to pay to get to do what you do, Peter? And Peter's just like, oh, just disgusted. Imagine if you had people like this coming into the church, murderers coming into the church, priests, Pharisees, cynicism. When Paul shows up, Acts chapter 9, the disciples didn't want to be around him. Too cynical. That can't be a legitimate conversion. When Peter led his friend, new friend, Cornelius to Christ, he got back to Jerusalem. They took issue with him. Why were you in his house? What were you doing there? Could you imagine if you went out, led a whole family to Christ, came back to your house church, and everyone was just like, what were you doing there? And why were you talking to those? You entered into the front door? I'd be getting phone calls like crazy. You know, man, my home church sucks. I just led a whole family to Christ, and they're all, you know, freaked out about which ethnicity these people are. Oh, yeah, this is a screwed up group. You know why? It was filled with people. The early church was filled with people. Legalism, Acts chapter 15, you got to be circumcised to walk with God. Public debate. I mean, this is a huge debate. They came from far and wide to debate this. This was a big problem. Disagreements over ministry. You got Paul, probably more of a hardliner. He's like, I am not taking John Mark. He flaked out back in, was it Cyprus? Acts 13. He was there with us for like 15 minutes. And then, LMS, I struck him blind, and he flaked out, went back to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, Barnabas, the encourager, the real sweetheart of a guy, he's like, I want to take him. And then we find out it's his cousin. And so Paul's like, nepotism. And Barnabas is like, grace. And Paul's just like, we got a mission here. And Barnabas is like, encouragement. And, you know, they're arguing with each other. And finally, they had such a sharp disagreement, they split up. Barnabas was the Yoko Ono of the first century, split up the band. And Paul went his way, Barnabas went another. I mean, there was problems, but every example of disagreement that we see in the book of Acts was met with what? Was met with waiting for the perfect timing to bring it up. Was met with taking bank shots that there might be a problem with Gentiles need to be circumcised to be saved. was met with telling a bunch of other people but never talking to the person themselves. I was met with, you know, I don't want to go overboard by talking to my friend about something. Where is this coming from? I can't talk to my friend about that. Oh, I just think that they would think it was, you know, too harsh. I don't want to be a legalist here and stuff. Talk to your friend. Every single time we see disagreement, there's discussion, there's dialogue, there's debate, there's disagreement. And they loved each other enough to have this out in differing realms. It wasn't all, you know, rebuke. The thing is, I've seen a trend where people think everything is rebuke. Oh, I couldn't go and talk to him. I don't want to rebuke him. Who said rebuke? Go talk to him. See where it goes. I was thinking to myself the other day, I can't remember the last time I rebuked somebody. I can't. Maybe you can. You're like, I remember it was me. I really can't. All right. How were they persecuted in the early church? Name calling. They were mocked. Remember at Pentecost, they're filled with wine. They were sneered at, Paul at the Areopagus. He's called a babbler and a pest, a ringleader of the Hyraces sect. Today we would say that the Jehovah's Witnesses are a sect of Christianity. The LDS Church is a sect of a cult. Paul, a sect, a cult leader of the Nazarenes. They split off of traditional Judaism into this weird splinter group, refusing to listen. Remember that time when Stephen comes in and he's teaching? And how well do they take that? I mean, that is a long speech, right? 50 verses. And that probably wasn't an exhaustive recording. But it says that they gnashed their teeth and they held their hands to their ears. Talk about not listening. I don't want to hear a word you have to say. Dismissing truth. You know, they just saw a miracle at Pentecost and they say, oh, you're drunk. What? How are these hillbilly Galileans able to speak, you know, perfect Latin, perfect languages from all over the world? Seeing miracles. You know, they heal the lame man. They're like, we know he was healed. We got to dismiss it. We got to cover it up. Threats, lots of threats. You know, stop speaking in the name of Jesus or else you're going to get it. We see this over lying. Is it true? Is it true that haters of Christianity would go so far that they would actually like not just have a different perspective? You know what I mean? Like they have a different worldview, but they would go out of their way to collect false witnesses and to lie, overtly lie against Christians. This is what the early church saw. Yeah. Overt lying. They knew it was false. They didn't care. Whatever works to stop this group. And unsubstantiated claims. Paul says, if the witnesses are here that saw me bring the guy into the temple, the Greek, show him. Let me see him. Where are the witnesses? Oh, no witnesses. Unsubstantiated. Tertullus, the lawyer. He couldn't defend the case. The prosecuting attorney. Paul sitting there going, where are the witnesses? You can't substantiate any of this. And by law, they should be here. Yeah. Well, then there's the imprisonment, the flogging, the beatings, the torture, and even murder and martyrdom. We haven't gotten to this part, to my knowledge. Yet. We haven't gotten here yet. Good thing I believe in the pre-trib rapture. Because I think I'm going to be out of here before we get to that point. Well, why were they persecuted? You might say, well, they were persecuted because they believed in Jesus. False. Not true. They were never persecuted for believing in Jesus. They were persecuted for their Christian lifestyle. It's okay to believe in Jesus. It was fine to believe in Jesus. It's when you make Jesus Lord of your life. When you start to say, Jesus is the King. I'm going to give my life to him. Different areas of my life, I've given lordship of that area of my life over to him. Not the least of which is when we decide that this is so true that we're going to start to tell this to other people. Oh, that is when the heat gets turned up to a significant degree. When you start to proclaim this to other people, that is not just true for me. The Romans had no problem with that. Everyone had their gods, their pantheon of deities. That's fine. At the Areopagus, they say Paul believes in Jesus and the resurrection. Two different gods. Jesus and resurrection. They had no problem with that. It wasn't until he said, no, Jesus rose from the dead and he's the only God. That's when they kicked him out of Mars Hill. That's when it happened. Once you start to proclaim, and I don't know if you've noticed this in the book of Acts, repeatedly, what do we see? Like in Jerusalem here, first we see incredible proclamation, 3,000 come to faith, people coming to Christ every single day, 5,000 come to faith in chapter 4, and then what do we see? Persecution. Peter and John are arrested, chapter 4. The 12 apostles, how about all your leaders, the entire apostolic group, arrested, thrown into jail. Then they're flogged, all of them. You know, their back is like hamburger after getting beaten. That's your leaders right there. Stephen and James are murdered. This is within a year or two. Stephen was within a year for sure. James, one of Jesus's inner three disciples, he was killed in AD 44. That's within a decade of the resurrection. So we're seeing instant retaliation, killing, murder, threats. Peter's arrested three times. I don't know if you ever counted this. With John, then he comes back, and then he comes back with all the other apostles. He's arrested again. An angel breaks him out, and then he comes back in chapter 12. An angel breaks him out a third time. And then it says in verse 17, he went to another place. Eventually, he got the hint. It's getting a little bit too hot around Jerusalem. He went to Corinth, probably. Well, then we read in Pisidian Antioch, proclamation. The whole city came to hear Paul teach in verse 44. The word of the Lord was being spread to the whole region, followed by what? Persecution. The religious leaders instigated a persecution against Paul and Barnabas. Whoa, that's like one verse later. Have you ever noticed this? Whenever ground is taken for the gospel of Jesus Christ, it's always met with persecution. We see this pattern repeatedly. Iconium, Lystra, large numbers of people believed. Many made disciples, and then persecution. The religious leaders had Paul stoned nearly to death. Philippi, same pattern. Lydia's household comes to Christ. The Philippian jailer comes to Christ. They become huge givers, incredible givers. They gave beyond what they could give, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Followed by persecution, beaten with rods, unjustly imprisoned. Thessalonica, Berea, big proclamation. Some were persuaded. Many of them believed, and they chased them all the way down. And it says the Jews, becoming jealous, taking some along with them, some wicked men from the marketplace, formed a mob and set the city in an uproar. They turned the entire city against this burgeoning Christian movement. Corinth. Maybe in Corinth it was peaceful. Sorta. Yeah. The synagogue leader came to Christ. Many Corinthians came to Christ. Hence, we have three letters to the Corinthians. Maybe four. Two in our Bible. But we know we got one letter before 1 Corinthians. Many Corinthians came to Christ. Met with persecution. They go to Gallio, and they say, yeah, he's breaking the law. And he says, get out of here. But the Jews with one accord brought him before the judgment seat. Luckily, a couple verses earlier, Jesus said to Paul, what? To not be afraid, but go on speaking and teaching, for I have many people in the city. Once Jesus says that, you don't have to worry. It doesn't matter if there's a Sosthenes, a Gallio, a crowd, the whole city turning against you. It doesn't matter. When Jesus says, I'm with you, you stay. And it says he stayed for another year and a half. What about Ephesus? Big, booming metropolis. All who lived in Asia heard the word. The word of the Lord was growing mightily, followed by Demetrius, the silversmith. Remember, he gets that whole Artemis guild together, and they start frantically screaming, you know, great is the goddess Artemis, and the town clerk comes in and breaks it up. Well, these are the guys that chase Paul all the way down to Jerusalem and repeatedly try and have him killed. That's a huge trip. They were that blinded with rage that they tracked him all the way down to Jerusalem from Ephesus. What about Rome? Tacitus, he says that there was an immense multitude of Christians by AD 64, the great fire in Rome, in his Annals, book 15, met by Christians being torn by dogs, nailed to crosses, and doomed to the flames. What's the point here? The point is this. Each one of us in this room, we know Christ today. The reason that we're following Jesus Christ is because we were put on the back of the suffering of these Christians. Paul knew what he was getting into. Jesus told him right up front, I will show you how much you must suffer for my namesake. And every time he went into a city, it was with the knowledge that I'm going into the city, knowing that people are going to come to faith, and knowing I'm going to pay an enormous price for each and every one of those souls that were saved. Yeah, we're going to pay a price. Is it worth it? Well, let's ask these questions. Is our church similar in its mission to the early church? Answer, yes. Yes. Evangelism, discipleship. I didn't even get into the number of times disciples are being made in the book of Acts. I would be here all night. Evangelism, discipleship in the context of community. Evangelism, discipleship in the context of community. Do we have the same mission? Yes. Do we emphasize the same thing as the early church? Yes. We are not into all these tangents, politics, worship services, God knows what. We are into evangelism, discipleship, in the context of community. Are we seeing similar problems as the early church? Yes, we are. Again, I didn't even get into the epistles here, but man, were they filled with problems. Filled. From stem to stern. Sin, division, carnality, apostasy, persecution. All this is normal. This is complete. Peter says, don't be surprised when this happens. Here's the question I'd like to leave you with. Are we in God's will or not? Are we in God's will or not? Because this question, the way you answer this question here, is going to logically connect with that first question. Is it worth it? If you can say, we're in God's will, this is what God would have me do, is it worth it? Absolutely it is. Reminds me of this passage here, Colossians 1:24. Paul says, I am glad when I suffer for you in my body, for I am participating in the sufferings of Jesus that continue for his body, the church. What he's saying here is I'm suffering for the sake of the church. The reason we're here today is because Paul suffered for the church. And those people to whom Paul ministered, they suffered for others. And so it's been for 20 centuries, right on down to today. The question for us is, are you willing to pay a personal price so that others can come to faith in Jesus Christ? You know, this past couple years, we have weathered quite a bit. I'm talking several years. A pandemic, politics, disagreement, fighting, betrayal, personal hurt. Oh my God, talking to many of you in this room, my heart aches. Sometimes in prayer, just weeping in prayer for the suffering that we're seeing here. All I can say is there's going to be more. There's more on its way. And God says that to us. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't say, I'm sorry that you have to suffer. He says, this is the way. This is the truth. This is the life. I saw a study recently, 38% of pastors last year were thinking about walking away from vocational ministry. Not me, that's for sure. I'm not going anywhere. Maybe I'm not going to get a paycheck at some point. Maybe they're going to get sick of me and be like, you're out of here. I'm still going to keep doing what I'm doing. I don't care if they're paying me or not. Maybe I'll go and get good at selling insurance. I'm an English major. I don't know what to do. I'm going to keep right on preaching. I'm going to keep right on writing, leading. I don't care in what capacity. If God's like, here's the mop, do the floors, I'm going to say, yes, sir. I've made up my mind on this. I know many people in this room have as well. You know where you want to be. You know what you want to do with your life. There's no looking back. You've made up your mind. If you haven't made this decision in the heart to say, I am all in on this, there's no looking back. I made my decision April 2005, and I said, I'm willing to suffer. And boy, I have. Not as much as people in this room, I know that. I've taken my share. And all I can say is following Christ, it's difficult. It's the most difficult thing I've ever done, but it is the most rewarding, awesome thing I've ever been a part of. The question before you is, are you willing to pay a personal price? It's going to be different for each one of us. That's for sure. But are you handing over the reins and saying, God, I'm done trying to control this. You're in charge. You're the Lord. I'm not the Lord. I'm here to listen to you. I'm here to follow you. Have you made up your mind on that?